back to the American Revolution podcast, episode 73, The Road Less Traveled. The battles around Hobarton and Fort Anne were the focus of last week's episode, the last episode. These battles proved that the American army still had fight in them. The terrain is well suited for their brand of fighting, run and gun, hidden tactics. The Indians that were following Burgoyne's were useful, but they can't predict where they're going to go. They're useful for pulling the Americans out of their concealed positions or circumventing some of those concealed positions, but the Americans would run and gun too quickly. And especially at Fort Anne, where there were no Indians, it was one regiment versus a fort of quote-unquote 1,000 men who were tricked into believing that they should wait, only to the next morning being getting an early morning attack from 400 New York militiamen. And this is where things start to get really confusing. And it's going to be a lot of back and forth and a lot of jumping around. But after Fort Anne, Van Rensselaer and the men from Fort Anne, Van Rensselaer and his 400 militiamen and the soldiers that arrived at Fort Anne, all of them head to go to Fort Edward. Now, at Fort Edward, Schuyler had arrived on July 8th, and he immediately takes stock of his situation. He has 600 to 700 Continentals, 1,400 militiamen. 400 of those are Van Rensselaers who were sent to Fort Anne. So, assuming that when Van Rensselaer returns with the men from Fort Anne, I mean, he's going to have a group of about 2,000 men available to him. And then whenever Sinclair arrives with his troops, I mean, he's going to have a mediocre-sized force, 4,000 or so men. Problem was, Fort Edward was an old French and Indian era war fort. And Fort Edward has not seen any care or upkeep since then. Most of the artillery that the Americans were moving down to the fort were part of the Benedict Arnold campaign. They were coming off the ships now that, you know, they're fighting on land and not on the water anymore. But those guns, they removed the carriages so that they could work aboard the gondolas and galleys. Or worse, they had to transport the they were transporting the guns, and the carriages are too bulky and too heavy, so they dump the carriages, and there were no carpenters to build new ones. So without any real artillery to post up on the fort, Schuyler was looking at some real trouble. Not to mention the fact that he has about 5 cartridges apiece per man. He only has about 10 to 20,000 rounds of ammunition. That is not a lot, especially for muskets. The thought is that Burgoyne's irregulars, his Canadians, Tories, and Indians, would be a sizable enough force to take the fort. Now, Burgoyne, in the meantime, is in Gainsborough and has a choice ahead of him. He can continue with his large force and include his Navy ships and bring them down from Fort Champlain to Lake George. From Lake Champlain to Lake George, and then sail his entire force to Fort George, which was about 5 or so miles from Fort Edward, and take a direct route right to Schuyler. Or he could take his bateau, which he had also numerous amounts of, especially the bateau that he captured from the Americans, and he could walk his bateau over land, which would take a couple of days, and he could ship his supplies to Fort George, where he would rendezvous with them, and then from there, march to Fort Edward. Here's the problem. To move the ships overland would take months. You would have to disassemble ships, rebuild them, get them onto Lake George, and then sail down to Lake George. It would be the following year before you were ready for action. And then you don't know what the American system is, the American reinforcements are going to be like. You don't even know what their army is going to look like. all of a sudden you could be outnumbered. You just don't know. Schuyler could give up Fort Edward and he can move to a different position. And then this whole thing starts again where you have to bring the ships. And you're going to bringing the ships just became too much of a hassle. So he's going to march over land. Now this is where it becomes a real problem. Because Schuyler anticipated this. And after he chased away the original Burgoyne expeditions, he began After Van Rensselaer chased away the original Burgoyne expedition to Fort Anne, he orders about 1,000 or so good axemen to chop down trees from the areas around Fort Anne and going towards Skenesborough and the road going to Fort Edward. Now, to remember, these paths through the woods, these roads, were nothing more than wagon cuts from years of wagons going through the woods. They kind of just rubbed out a small track through the woods. And they had to be maintained, trees had to be cut, so on and so forth. But they were pretty much just two wagon treads in the dirt. On all sides, there's trees. So Schuyler orders his axemen to cut down the big trees, fell them across the road. The road goes along swamps and creeks. He orders his men to dig trenches from the creeks and swamps to the road. And when what happens is you have that road flooded. And when you flood the road, it just becomes a soupy mess. Now, it would be easy for troops to maneuver through mud. It's really not that terrible. But your wagons would suffer greatly. And your troops can't just climb over the trees because, once again, your wagons and artillery are stuck behind the trees. So Burgoyne, taking the land route, decides that, well, this is going to be a bit of a problem. And he spends from July 9th to the 25th with his Canadians and any other men that he could get clearing the roads. So just as fast as the Americans are felling trees across the roads, the British are having to clear these roads and try and fix the flooding that the Americans caused. It was so bad that it took the British Army was marching at the rate of about a mile per day, because it's only about 15 to 20 miles from Skenesborough to Fort Anne. So, and then from Fort Anne, it's about 10 or so miles to Fort Edward. And this continued. So, finally on the 25th, the army will arrive at Fort Anne, and then 4 days later, they're able to arrive at Fort Edward. So by July 29th, a full 20 days, it took them to go just about 25 miles. And that's why I kind of want to use the reference that the time it... I kind of was reading the reference point that they give for moving just the supplies from Lake Champlain down to Fort George took that same amount of time. I don't believe is a coincidence. It would be interesting if it was, but anywhere you read the supplies, they say they arrive on the 25th, and I believe that's because, well, the army finally gets there. If they showed up at Fort George with no military support, then all those supplies would be in the hands of the Americans, possibly. So I think what happens is that they delay or they wait until the army arrives. So having that 20-day breakup from getting to Skenesborough down to Fort Edward really messed with all the plans that Burgoyne has. Now, it didn't take Schuyler 3 weeks to fell trees and flood the roads. It probably only took a few days. So what happens in the interim? Well, The army is reorganized at Fort Edward on the 12th because Sinclair arrives, followed by Long and his men from Fort Ann. Also, Brigadier John Nixon had arrived from Peekskill with 600 more Continentals. Schuyler now had in the vicinity of about 2,900 Continentals and another 1,600 militia that were available to him. The numbers are better. 3,500 men. I had to do that math in my head real quick. 3,500 men is better than the about 2,000 he had to begin with. But these numbers were still not going to be enough. Another problem is a lot of these troops are New Englanders, and they were not big fans of Schuyler. This is a known problem, which is why Benedict Arnold and Brigadier General Benjamin were sent from Connecticut and Massachusetts, respectfully, because the Continental Army, the Continental Brass, George Washington in particular, he wanted Schuyler to, you know, in his position, but the problem is if you're going to have dissension among your men, he decides to send those New England generals who were respected into Schuyler's army because it hoped it would, you know, smooth things over. This did little, though. Schuyler still didn't have the trust of his men. And so, of course, when he pulls his army back to the Saratoga area, he starts to get a lot of flack. And there was even theories that him and Sinclair were paid off by the British. So these rumors run rampant through the camp, and there's actually one theory that I found hilarious, and that was that the British were firing cannonballs made of silver into Fort Ticonderoga as a payment to Sinclair to pay for his evacuation. Well, none of that is true. It's very interesting thought, but clearly there was going to be problems. Schuyler moves his men to the Saratoga area near his actual home. He had a summer home, a farmhouse in that area. And they even had Polish engineer Thaddeus Kosciuszko, who laid out plans for an expansive defensive work that Schuyler ordered to begin immediately. But none of this did anything to quell the morale problems that were running rampant through the camp. So, General Horatio Gates arrives on August 19th. His orders were given to replace Schuyler. Unfortunately for the good general, he would actually be forced to face a courts-martial over this whole Ticonderoga and the subsequent retreats from Skanesboro, Fort Ann, and Fort Edward the following year. He, of course, is acquitted of all charges. When you think about the facts, Schuyler was given a zero-sum gain. He was not given adequate supplies. He did not have adequate manpower. There was no way he was going to stand up to a fully battle-ready British army. He needed to find a good defensible position, and he finds that in Saratoga. Unfortunately, Horatio Gates is going to steal a lot of the credit from not just Schuyler, but other generals that we will see. But the Polish engineer Thaddeus Kosciuszko is a man we are going to talk about in episodes to come and campaigns to come. There's a reason he is a big hero to the Polish people. And that's because the defensive work that he lays out at Saratoga was probably one of the best and well-fitted for a battlefield in the entire American Revolution. So, where are we now? Burgoyne holds Fort Edwards. He is now getting his guns and supplies from Fort George. He had been in contact with Howe throughout his whole march. And if we think back to the beginning, we had discussed the fact that Burgoyne saw his plan as coming to this. I'm in Canada. I'm going to march myself down to Albany, a key American hub in upstate New York, a key city, and a big port on the Hudson River. You, Howe, who are stationed in and around the New York area, are going to come north. You're going to meet me in Albany, and thus that's how we're going to cut the American colonies in half. The biggest supporters of the American Revolution will be cut off from their government, and the other southern colonies, which were big supporters. And so now you're taking a large source of manpower away from the Continental Army. They'll never survive. Well, Howe just abandons this plan. I don't think he had much faith in it. And he, I think, was tired of people speaking out against the fact that Washington, for the last year, has been evading him. And then he sneak attacks him on Christmas. I think Howe wanted a little bit of vengeance. And so he decides that he's going to chase down Washington in a campaign that we are going to talk about after this one. So his response to Burgoyne was that if Washington intends to march north to support Schuyler, then he would march north. Otherwise, he was on his way to Pennsylvania to chase down General Washington. Burgoyne had no choice in this change of plan, but he also didn't tell anyone. He made sure everyone was still thinking that Howe was going to meet him in Albany. He didn't want anyone to know that he was going to go at this alone, but he was definitely going to bring the fight to the Americans, and he believed that if he could take Albany, then Howe would have no choice but to come in to support him. Or, at the very least, it would force Washington to head north to support Schuyler and Gates, but that would be that's yet to be seen. So a lot has gone on. There's a lot of movement, a lot of changing of the guard. So where are we at? Schuyler, he is now out of the military picture. Horatio Gates is now the general commander of all Northern Department forces. Benedict Arnold is now back into the regular service. Benjamin Lincoln is back into regular service. Here we are. These men are going to be some of our key commanders. We are now going to spur off from the main army, and we're going to look at what happens when the Germans, in search of horses, head into a town into what is present-day Vermont and run into some very angry Vermont and New Hampshire militia and Continentals. And that's going to be the Battle of Bennington. It's going to be one of the, as I said, four turning points to the American Revolution. And I think at the end of the campaign, I think I'm going to poll out there, which one do you think of these three is the definite turning point to the American Revolution? And then we'll look at the fourth, which happens in and around Washington's army. And then we'll eventually poll out of those two, which people think. And I'm curious to see responses. As for this episode, we are done. I do appreciate everyone being patient. At the end of the school year is just a crazy mess for me. But I do plan on having Bennington out next week. I'm very excited about it. It is a great battle nonetheless. And we are going to have a lot of information. I thought breaking up these two episodes was a good idea. And seeing that I'm already at about 10 or 15 minutes of recording time, I'm glad that I decided to do a shorter episode this week for giving the Battle of Bennington a full dedicated episode next week. Till then, as always, keep the powder dry.